welcome to the Well and Well podcast. I'm your host, Susie Clark, and I am a corporate dropout who spent 6 years in banking and technology in sales roles in London. And I just got totally fed up with working long hours, horrible commutes, and sitting in the same desk chair every single day. I got so fed up with it that I quit my job and moved to Bali in Indonesia. And I'm now dedicated to helping others achieve this lifestyle through remote work opportunities. And I really just want to spread the awareness around this and inspire you to live life on your own terms. So this podcast is all about sharing stories from remote workers who are fortunate enough to have crafted a life for themselves where they can make money and travel the world at the same time. So if you're listening now and you're sick of your 9-to-5 and you're fed up of your commute and you want the freedom to travel, then this podcast is for you. There are so many incredible opportunities for you to live life on your own terms and earn a living, from freelancing to becoming a digital nomad to getting a remote job and traveling the world as well. These ways of living are all possible for you. And through my guest stories, you will learn what is possible and the tips on how to get there. We're all incredibly lucky to be living in a time where technology enables us to travel and earn a living at the same time. The traditional work contract of exchanging time for money and working in the office is no longer a good deal with so many other incredible opportunities out there. To be well in life, you need to do some wild things. So this week we have an amazing guest. His name is Niels Katau and he is one of the leading conversion optimization experts, and he's also a good friend of mine. He's originally from Germany and he now lives in Bali in Indonesia. And his story is super inspiring. So Niels developed an interest in tech and marketing from a really young age. And we chat all about how he founded a marketing agency in his early 20s that he grew to 50 plus employees. So a pretty amazing achievement. And Niels kind of explains that how he had it in his head that his version of success was to grow a super large company. And, you know, once he reached that level, he'd feel successful and, you know, happy. And once he actually did reach that level and surpassed the goal that he had, he actually started to feel quite unhappy and it wasn't as amazing as he kind of had imagined. And I think that that's a really interesting message in his story. And I think we go on to discuss what happiness is, how do we find happiness, and how it's more about enjoying the process. And Niels has done a lot of self-reflection work to kind of understand what makes him happy and things like that. So it's a super interesting conversation. Today, Niels now consults on all things conversion optimization. He actually ended up selling his marketing agency and he consults for several high profile enterprise level clients. He's a frequent speaker at many conferences and he also co-hosts his own podcast with his friend Izzy called The Izzy and Niels Show, where they discuss all things kind of marketing, conversion optimization, SEO related. So you should definitely check that out as well. And I've posted a link in the show notes. And the other thing we chat about is how Niels has worked really hard to kind of design a lifestyle that he loves. And he has actually ended up working only a few hours per month for clients, which allows him to spend the rest of his time on passion projects and enjoying life in Bali. And it's a super inspiring conversation. And I think that a lot of people on the face of it would think, wow, that kind of lifestyle sounds impossible. I don't believe it. But it's really interesting to understand how Niels has crafted this for himself through building a personal brand, finding a niche, becoming an expert and really good at what he does, and also a lot of consistent self-reflection throughout his kind of journey. So it's an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy the episode. Welcome, Niels. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm really excited to share your story with the listeners today. I think what we'll start with is your interesting background in terms of how you got into business very early on in life, in terms of you set up a few things when you were 14. And let's also chat a little bit about your uni experience as well. So let's start off with kind of your interest in marketing and when that started at quite a young age.
Okay, so there was actually one crucial moment in my life where I found interest in digital stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was when I was sitting at my best friend's home and we were sitting in his room, and then His brother was on their computer. They only had one computer. It was when I was 11, so in must have been 1998 or something. Yeah. And yeah, he was sitting on his computer and he was editing a picture of Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, and he made her look like she wasn't wearing a top in Microsoft Paint. And right. I was so, obviously not because of that image, but in general, like the possibilities, how cool it is that you can edit pictures in this way, that was kind of, yeah, a very crucial moment for me. And then I don't know, I don't know if I should say this, but I pirated a version of Photoshop.
Why not? And then, yeah. We're unconventional on this podcast.
Of course, yeah. And, or of any image editing software. I'm not going to mention Photoshop. That's fine. And then, yeah, I don't know. I just played around a bit. And then from my interest in gaming at that time, I was kind of figuring out by teaching myself how to do it, how to build a website on about a game. And then that was my first website, and I was still 11 when I launched it. So
wow.
Yeah, that was pretty early. And then when I was 14, I did my first internship as a web designer mm-hmm. from school at that time. And then, yeah, I don't know, I never really lost my interest in it. So that was the only thing professionally I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And then, well, my CV is kind of weird, so I took a lot of turns and everything, but it always was in the same field.
Yeah.
However, that's maybe not so interesting. And yeah, in uni, I was studying communications design and art direction in Hamburg, Germany, and that was not really my thing. So although it was kind of connected to what I liked, I was really only interested in the online stuff. So whenever we were talking about graphic design or a drawing or anything, that was really nothing for me. And then, yeah, in the end, I just told you before. So we had 4 years. I had 8 semesters, if yeah. that's the word. Yeah. And yeah, I finished my time there, but I didn't get my degree because, mm-hmm. I don't know, I was just not interested enough in the topic to invest the time, to invest all my efforts to get a good degree. So I kind of didn't care. And then I started my business right after.
Mm-hmm. Okay, amazing. And so during your degree, you obviously were not necessarily enjoying it, or you weren't necessarily challenged or interested in the subject matter. So in terms of starting your own business afterwards, was that something that you always wanted to do throughout your time at university? Or like, at what point did you realize that?
So it was more, I mean, at some point I had to earn money because yeah. when I was still in uni, I mean, I'm not proud of it, but I didn't really earn money in that time. So my parents would pay, or the state would pay in some situations or for some things. And yeah, after that, I just had to. So I had to, I also told you before, like I had to quit my gaming career yeah. that I started. So
let's tell the listeners a little bit about that, because that's I think that's really interesting and very different. And I like different.
Yeah, so yeah, I was playing World of Warcraft, and I was rank 7 of more than 11 million players in the Burning Crusade, which
wow.
is one add-on of World of Warcraft. And yeah, but I didn't earn money at that time, so I could sell my account in the end. However, it was a very bad hourly rate.
Hold on a minute, you could sell your account?
Yes.
What? So explain that. Why would people buy your account?
Because I had all the items that you would only get if you're really good at the game.
So they would buy it?
Yes.
And that's basically cheating.
Well, it's not cheating. It's just
they didn't do the work.
Yeah. It's still not cheating. I mean, it's also not, I think it's not allowed to sell accounts or to buy them, but still it happens a lot. So, yeah. But still, I spent like 500 days real lifetime, like 500 times yeah. 24 hours in the game, and I got like €2,000. So it was a really
wow.
bad ROI, I would say.
No, but interesting talents there, Niels.
Thanks. However, I had to stop, and then I sold my account because I had to stop the game because otherwise I would have never earned money.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that pro gaming would be a thing today to earn money, or streaming and everything. So yeah, I was just too early mm-hmm. with that interest. However, so I was, yeah, when I finished uni, I had to start earning money. And then I first started out as a freelancer.
Mm-hmm. So what were you doing as a freelancer?
I was building or optimizing websites.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I was very interested all the time in this, is what I do, this conversion optimization topic. So I wouldn't only build a website so that it's beautiful or so that it, I don't know, like the typical business card, but online, but I actually wanted to make sure that the websites that I build or improve are actually better than what people would get usually. So I was doing a lot of testing. So I did a lot of A/B testing where you compare one version of a website with another and measure if more people buy there and so on. So yeah, that was basically what I did. Though in the beginning, I wasn't very, very focused on this. So I did more or less anything that people would give me. So it was a lot of, I don't know, creating ads for Deutsche Bahn, like the German train company. And yeah, I was still doing a lot of Flash, so this animation stuff and so on. So it was really everything. It wasn't only optimization, but at some point I specialized in this.
Okay, and just to explain to the listeners who might not necessarily have too much of a technical background, so in terms of optimizing a website to make one better than the other, what is kind of the outcome that you're looking to get? Is it purely an increase in sales? Like, what defines a better website than another one?
Usually it's an increase in your primary goal. So whatever that is, can be, if you are looking for people to contact you, like getting a lead, then the lead would be your primary goal that you optimize for. Or if you're an online shop, it's sales. If you are, I don't know, if you're a Netflix, you want to get more subscribing or more paying subscribers and so on. So it can be anything that is your main goal, but you can also optimize for non-main goals. Like, you have macro conversions, which is the big ones, and then you have micro conversions, which is like, I want people to put more items in my cart, even though they might not buy stuff like this.
Okay, makes sense. And I think that sounds like a very valuable skill to give a client. So how did you actually learn how to do these things? And how did you learn, like, how to go to a client and say, I can increase your sales by X or whatever? How did you learn how to do this?
It was all self-taught. So as I said, I started when I was 11 building websites. And then, I don't know, all the background skills, like designing a website, copywriting. I'm not very good at copywriting, but I'm good in theory, so I know what should be there. I'm just bad at formulating or forming the sentence. And then, yeah, all of this front end stuff like HTML, CSS, the languages you need to be able to write to build a website. All of this I just taught myself over the years. And then all of the psychology part. So I didn't study psychology or anything, but when you want to optimize a website, you need to understand how people behave, why they behave like this, and so on. And that I mostly learned through books or visiting conferences. And then I think I have a gift, in quotes, of being very, very able to adapt knowledge. So when someone talks about something, then I'm, for me, it's extremely easy to adapt that to my website, to other websites, and so on. And so whenever I learn something or I hear something new, I think I'm very able to use this knowledge for all my projects. So I guess that's why I'm pretty good at what I do.
I think that's a really amazing story, particularly for someone at such a young age to just take it upon themselves to go and learn all of these things and start their own business. And in terms of my listeners, so a lot of them might be at a similar stage in terms of they have a corporate job, or they've just finished uni and they would love to start their own business, or they might have a skill they've learned in corporate that they can take freelance. But I think one of the biggest concerns and fears that people have is how to get their first clients, and I think sometimes it's a mindset thing, like it's a belief thing, but what did you do to get your first few clients when you hadn't necessarily had any from that point?
I think it mostly came through people recommending me, so it was all recommendations, or almost all, and I rarely really applied for anything. So I wasn't pitching or anything. And yeah, I just think if you know a person that knows a person that needs something, then it kind of works. Of course, you still need to be able to sell yourself then. So I wasn't ever cold calling someone or something. So, and I would never do it because I would feel terrible doing this and I don't want to annoy people. But no, I don't know. It was really recommendations. And then at some point from one job that you had, another comes, and then they recommend you to someone else. And of course, you also need to be present somehow. So the first jobs I got through this, but then over time I started speaking at conferences, I started to do live streams about my profession and so on. And then in the end, this gave me all the big clients that I have today, and also made me be able to have what I would have thought that is an insane daily rate at that time. But today I can have this just because I'm in kind of a, not really a public person, but I'm kind of well known in my field.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, yeah, because I think there's kind of two things there. There's kind of the first stage of getting the initial clients. So I guess if you were talking to a listener out there who was like, right, okay, I've got this skill, I do this for an employer at the moment, I'm going to go freelance, what would you say to them in terms of getting their first clients? Would you say just put the feelers out to their network and say, look, I'm going to be doing this work on my own now, do you have any projects? Like, what advice would you give that listener?
Yeah, it's difficult. So I think it might help just to ask, hey, do you know someone who knows someone? Or you can use job boards or anything. So there's a lot of websites out there. Like, I've never used them really, but something like Upwork, I think many people use. And yeah, I would just go there to get my first projects and even do something for way less than you should earn, or even for free, just to get some testimonials, just to get some some projects that you can show when you actually want to earn money with it. So because no one would work with you if you have nothing to show, because no one wants to buy something without knowing what they're getting. So yeah, I would start like this, and then
that's good advice. Work up from there. I like to give them actionable insights and actionable tips. Okay, so presumably then you grew this to like a larger point with bigger clients over time. So I would love to talk a little bit about landing like the bigger clients, but I don't want to jump too far ahead either. So and what you just said there about getting speaking gigs and things, it sounds to me like it's really important to build your personal brand and kind of build you as an expert in that field so that people are aware, and that can kind of bring their own, bring leads in itself, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So what did you then do for the next few years in terms of, you started out as a freelancer, did you just grow this business to work with bigger clients and command higher fees?
No, I think the most important thing that I did was specialization. So I stopped being the web designer who also does business cards and also designs your logo, because people don't want to work with people who are not specialists at what they do. So if I'm looking for someone who builds my website, then I want someone who specialized in this. So at some point I found my niche, which was conversion optimization, where I'm saying I'm not even building new websites anymore. I'm actually just optimizing websites. Yeah. And yeah, this was, I would say, the most important part of being able to land bigger projects or bigger or higher paying clients. When I did this specialization, I kind of got so many clients that I had to get my first employee. And then it went really fast from zero employees to 55 in the end.
55, wow. Okay.
Yeah, that was where I left my agency.
Okay. So, and this was all in Germany, right?
Yeah, Berlin. Okay. Yeah, and yeah, so I don't know, it's kind of important even for yourself, but also for your employees. So in the beginning, I wanted to get an employee that kind of does everything so that I could give different tasks to. But then at some point when I had like 10 employees or something, I noticed that these employees actually don't help anymore, because we need specialization as well. So, and then these generalists, if that's the word, they don't really help you in a later stage in your business. So at least for me, it wasn't the case. So then I even had to get rid of the first employees that I had and so on. But but in general, doing the specialization and being public about it, so talking at conferences, having case studies, partnering with other companies that are, or with tools or something that are well known in your industry, helped me a lot.
And how did you feel running a business of that size? Because that's pretty big, and it's definitely a different to being a freelancer solo.
Yeah.
And also, I guess, was it a physical, like, was it an office with people present? How did it feel like running a company of that size?
So I always, when I was starting out, I always thought it would be so cool to have a big company, and I always wanted to have 30 employees. That was always my life goal, more or less. And the closer I got to this life goal, the less I liked my work.
Okay,
because,
interesting.
Because from doing the actual work, and I'm, as I said, so I was always in love with optimizing websites, with the actual work. And then it went from doing the actual work to more doing HR, finding the right people, training them, talking to lawyers, talking about tax stuff, and blah, blah, blah. So your focus of work shifts from being an operational person to being a management person. Yeah. And for me, that's terrible. So I don't like managing. I'm super unorganized. I'm actually the worst person to do this. But we were too small, so I could give it to someone else to do all of this management stuff. But we're too big to not do it. So I kind of had to do it at this point. And yeah, for me, it wasn't nice. And that was one of the reasons why I decided not to continue having an agency. Okay. And
But let's talk a little bit about that, because I think that is a tough decision, particularly when it was a big goal of yours that you thought, okay, I want this big company, and then that actually you end up getting that and it doesn't turn out to be what you thought. And I think a lot of listeners could probably resonate with that. I've heard them feedback to me lately, a lot of people getting their dream job and then being disappointed and realizing, oh my God, this isn't actually what I thought. And I guess it's slightly similar, slightly different. But what was that like? Like, what impact did that have on you?
I don't know. For me, I just felt really unhappy in my life. So I mean, having a bigger agency is not only cool and you think, oh, the more people I employ, the less I have to work. It's actually the opposite. At least for me, it was the case. And then, you have this huge responsibility of paying a lot of money each month in salaries. And then when you don't have a sales team that works so well, then in the end, it's always your head that will get chopped off if something doesn't work. And yeah, for me, it was just not nice. And I took these problems home. And because I was, my girlfriend at the time was also part of the company.
Okay.
And it was not good to mix all of this.
Yeah, I can imagine that probably had quite an impact on your own kind of like well-being, I guess, and stress levels and things like that. So what did you do next then? I guess you took the decision to like leave the business or sell it, or what did you do at that point?
Yeah, so I wanted to do different things. So one of my biggest needs or my biggest desires is sharing my knowledge, because I don't know, I just think it's fun, it's important, it makes other people happy, blah, blah, blah. And so I couldn't really when I had the agency, because the competition wasn't allowed to know what we did exactly. So that was a problem. And I also had different projects on my mind that I wanted to do, like running my own conference and stuff like this, but I didn't really have time for it. And yeah, so in the end, I decided to sell my company to my partner that I had at that time. And he took my parts or my shares, and yeah, that was kind of the best decision of my life, because I was suddenly alone. Like I didn't have any employee anymore. I had time for all of my projects. I did this conference in Berlin and so on and so on. And yeah, for me these days, I don't understand why someone would be like, oh, my goal is to have a big company, because I've been there. But I had the same wish when I was younger too. But these days I'm like, who do you want to impress by this?
Exactly.
And I think it's just an ego thing. It was an ego thing for me, I guess. And I had wrong expectations of living the big CEO life and blah, blah, blah. And I don't know. I think you have to be there to experience it.
Yeah. But no, I think I'm picking up on quite a lot of self-awareness stuff, which I think is really important as well. I guess, yeah, you decided that you wanted to have this goal of this big company, but then when you found yourself in that, you weren't having a good time, or you realized this isn't what I want to be focusing on. And then you're obviously thinking, okay, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to do now, which I think is a really good tip to the listeners in terms of you need to think about what it is that makes you happy. What are your strengths? What do you want to do every day? And it's not necessarily what society tells you is successful or that kind of idea, if that makes sense.
Also, one very important part in making this decision, it's super cliche and cheesy, but there's this, I think, 2004 speech of Steve Jobs at Stanford University. Yeah. Where he talks about three lessons in life, blah, blah, blah. And then at one point he says something like, whenever he wakes up in the morning, he stands in front of a mirror and he asks himself, if this was the last day of my life, would I do what I'm going to do today? Wow. And whenever the answer was no too many times in a row, he would change something. And that's kind of what I live up to these days. Mm-hmm. Again, it's super cliche and because it's Steve Jobs, but it actually helps. And these days I don't stick around stuff that doesn't make me happy, not only in business, but in anything like relationships. If I have someone who isn't good for me, then these days I'm pretty fast with telling them to fuck off.
Yeah, oh my God, love that. No, I totally agree. And I guess this is a bit of a tangent, but I think it's so important that it's kind of like this thing about enjoying the process and enjoying the present moment. Everyone talks about it, but it is true, because if you have this goal, okay, I'll be happy when I have this big company, or I'll be happy when I'm like managing 50 people. What about when that happens? And what if you're not happy? You've just wasted all that time like doing something to the point that you're not necessarily going to be happy from that. So and I'm not saying what you did was a waste of time at all, because you learned from what you learned from that experience. But I think a lot of people need to be really careful in terms of saying I'll be happy when, because you need to enjoy the process.
Yeah, also you shouldn't, I try not to make too long-term goals anymore, because it turns out different anyway. So I try to only plan short term and say, what do I want to achieve in the next 3 months or something, or what's my goal for that? And then it's actually more realistic, instead of saying in 10 years I want to have this and that. And I don't know, I also don't believe in this manifestation stuff that's such a big topic in Bali. I get the psychology behind it, because you would base your decisions on something, but it's not like just because you manifest something it happens. It's just, it changes your behavior, which is what works. But I don't know, some people think too spiritual about this,
I understand what you mean. Okay, so that was a good little tangent. I think that was important. Okay, so at that point then you decided, okay, I want to go and create this conference, I want to go and do this stuff. So what year was this that you decided to sell your business?
2016.
Okay, so what did you do next?
I was doing all of the stuff, everything I wanted. So I started speaking a lot, or much more, at conferences than I did before. I built my own conference in Berlin, which was a success in the first year, a fail in the second year, and a completely different business in the third year, which is happening right now, or which just happened. I built my own startup, like an e-learning platform for online marketers and so on, which is what I will focus on right now, or as the next thing that I'm going to do. And I don't know, I left Germany, which was a pretty big part that I could have never done if I would have kept my agency.
I'd love to talk a bit about that decision to leave Germany, actually. What was behind it? Or was it something you always wanted to do? Where did you go?
So I never took a flight until I was 27. Wow. So I wasn't ever a big traveler or anything. And also, I don't know, it's just, I didn't have the time, or I'd had the time, but I didn't really have the money to travel or anything. And then, I fell in love with other places, with warm weather, and also especially with the cultural differences that you would have in other countries, where people are just more happy than in Germany. And it's funny because Germany is people are so safe, like they are, it's safe, it's secure in terms of financial or whatever. But still, people are just not happy, at least compared to stuff like, I don't know, if you're here in Bali, you wouldn't have employees or staff in restaurants that is as happy as the people here. So it's just a very different culture. And I have to say, first, I don't know if I should, I never said this publicly, but actually my first main reason to leave Germany was tax savings. Because I've paid a lot of taxes in my time, especially when I sold the agency and so on. So that was one of the reasons. So I wanted to go to a warmer place where you can wear a t-shirt all day or all year. And I first decided to go to a warmer country in Europe, and then I was getting a recommendation from two friends that I should check out Dojo Bali before doing my world trip, which I was planning with my former girlfriend. Okay. And so then at that point, I was here and I wanted to check it out, how it is. And I fell so much in love with this place. And I have a very hard time socializing with people.
Really?
Yeah.
That surprises me.
That's okay. Here I don't. But okay. Normally in every other place of the world, I can't. But yeah. Here somehow it works. It's maybe because you have so many like-minded people in one place here. But put me in any country in the world and even put me in a bar and let everyone smile at me, I will not talk to anyone. So it's really hard for me. Okay. And yeah, I think that was one reason why I fell in love with this place so much. And then I had some other moments. Sorry, I'm skipping back and forth in time right now. But I had this time where I was being in New York, I still have my favorite band and they would play their first concert. And I told them whenever they play their first concert, I will go there, I will fly there, no matter where it is. And then I flew there and I asked Ben, the singer, if someone could take me from New York to Connecticut to the concert, because I have no idea how to get there. And then they said, yeah, here you can drive with Kim and Connor. And then Kim and Connor picked me up and they were super nice. And we arrived way too early at, I think, 2 p.m. or something, but the doors would open at 7 p.m. And I was like, well, great, what do we do now all day in this not so beautiful town, without mentioning the name? But then the door opens as soon as we arrive and the singer comes out. And I don't know, imagine your favorite band and being welcomed by the singer himself. I was having a fanboy moment after the other. Turned out that Kim was actually the girlfriend of the bass player of the band. And so I met all of these people, and what I figured was they all had nothing compared to what I had at that time in terms of financial wealth. Mm-hmm. And they were all happier than I was. So I was kind of, that already made me feel a bit weird, or made me think about things. And then after that, I went to Sydney, where I kind of had the same situation. So I met people being super happy in the countries where they live, without having so much materialistic stuff. And yeah, this kind of brought me in a, I don't want to say a crisis, but it made me think extremely much. And then I was sitting on my business class flight home feeling miserable about all this materialistic bullshit that actually doesn't make me happy. And so when I landed, I was I was kind of instantly selling or giving away everything that I owned, left Germany. So that was something that also added up to the decision of leaving Germany. It wasn't only taxes. It was also like, I'm not very happy here.
Yeah,
and I only found this out through traveling.
Yeah, but I think there's definitely something in travel that kind of opens your mind to different lifestyles and different perspectives and what priorities, life priorities should be. And I think I relate to you in the sense that, like, work, having a career in the city, there's such a narrow way of thinking and a narrow way of defining success, and it is very money driven. It's like buying a house, it's like getting married, it's like earning the most money, getting a promotion. And really, those things, there's so many like variables with that in terms of what could actually make you happy.
Yeah, and usually it's not all of these things.
No, and I think that's amazing that you decided to go traveling and had such an open mind to see other ways of living. And it's not to say money's bad either at all.
No, it's, I like it.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not the only thing to aim for.
Yeah. No, for me, it's really, as soon as I don't have to worry about money, it doesn't bother me at all. So, I don't know, I can have 100,000 euros or 10 million euros on my bank account. It wouldn't change anything.
Yeah.
It's just, I like not to worry about it, and that's all I want. And that's all that money means to me.
Yeah,
and the rest is just...
That's an amazing place to be, because it says to me that you've found something to work on or stuff to spend your time on that makes you happy, and money's just a byproduct, however much you're earning.
Yeah, and many people, I feel like, especially when they create fast wealth, like through winning the lottery or, I don't know, whatever happens in life, they would usually live a very unrealistic life and hence losing the money as well. So I don't know, you would then be in a club and get the 2,000 euro champagne bottle just because you can.
Yeah.
But that's stupid and that's unnecessary.
Yeah.
And for me, I don't know, I have my way of living, and it has, there's a price tag on it, but it's not insane. And I don't know, I just don't waste money just because I maybe could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally makes sense. Okay, so let's chat a little bit about... I'd love to talk about Bali, and you mentioned it a little bit then in terms of you fell in love with the place, and I very much feel the same. But it would be great to explain to the listeners about your experience here and what is it that you like about it so much, because some of the listeners may never have been here. They hear of Bali and it's this paradise place, but I think like this area in particular, Canggu, is so entrepreneurial and there's such an energy here that like I haven't come across in a lot of other places. So I'd love to hear your opinion on Bali and this area in particular.
Yeah, so one thing is, I mean, I agree, but I, for example, I don't really enjoy talking about business. Mm-hmm. Still, I think that the people here who are all kind of focused on their business are just nice to be around with, because they are kind of the same, or we're all sitting in the same boat, even if you don't talk about it all the time. So that's one thing. And then you have all these different events here. So there's so much going on. Every day you could visit a talk. Every day you could go party with them. So
yeah,
not only business-wise, but also private life-wise, there are so many opportunities here. And I don't know, I think one, for me, it's really the climate, because I'm just such a fan of the weather here. And being able to just, I don't know, having a cheap lifestyle. So because life here is not that expensive. It's more expensive than nomadlist.com would tell you, because I think the prices on Nomadlist for Canggu are really just if you never go out. However, going out is pretty expensive. So I don't know, if you can live easily on 2,500 euros or something when you're here. And so depending on how much you earn, or how many clients you have, how much you work, you don't have to work full time. So I work like 3 days, or actually only 1 to 2 days per month for clients, and the rest of the time I just do stuff that I like. And if I was living in Berlin or in Munich or anywhere in San Francisco, even worse, then I couldn't have so much time to try things out, to do whatever I want, or to even not work, because I would have to earn money for my life. But here I think, yeah, living or having low costs, but at the same time having one of the greatest places to be, is a very, very nice combination. And then you have all these nice people and so on and so on.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's, I just love everything here pretty much, apart from relationships.
No, I totally agree. And it's like amazing to meet people from all over the world, all different walks of life as well, all doing completely different things at different stages. And I just think it makes it a really exciting place. But on that, I kind of want to change tacked a little bit. So at this point, you just mentioned that you work, what was it, 3 days?
For clients, it's 1 to 2 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
A week?
A month.
A month.
Yes.
Which is amazing. And I think people listening will be like, what the fuck? Basically hearing that. But like, it is possible.
And I'm still working the other days, or many other days. It's just not for stuff where I earn money from directly. Yeah. It's
things that you enjoy.
Yes.
Yeah. But still, they would still be like, what? Because we're so conditioned to be in this like 9-to-5 mentality. So I would love for you to explain a little bit about how you've managed to do that, because presumably it's this thing of actually you have built your reputation to the point that you've got some larger clients. So it would be amazing to chat a little bit about how you've managed to get these larger clients and how you managed to retain them, and what your kind of tips are for that.
Yeah,
doing business with big businesses.
I'll start with the retaining, because that's very easy. It's just, first of all, get a retainer contract. So don't aim for a one-off project and then you have to do sales again. And then be amazing at what you do, so they will actually stick to you. So I have actually the two clients I work with right now, I've been working with since I left my company. So I never had to do sales. And it's more like I have a waiting list of companies wanting to work with me. So that's a pretty nice situation. And yeah, this waiting list, or in general, all clients that I have come from me doing public speaking, either that or live streaming. So what I already mentioned, but it does so much. So for example, I don't know, I did a live stream on Facebook the other day, and then the next day, or even the same day, I get an email from Hugo Boss.
Wow.
And they want to work with me. And it's just, it just comes from this, because it's so easy to reach all of these people if you're in your niche. And it's a topic that companies look I mean, they will Google for good people in this field, and then you probably show up, and then they just talk to you if they are convinced that you're good at what you do. Mm. So yeah, for me, this is all I do. Mm. So I could do more. I could do sales. I could, I don't know, sell some courses online or whatever, which is also something where people live off from. But for me, it's really enough just to do some public speaking.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that's amazing. And I think we're kind of coming up to time. So my last question would be for... Actually, no, I have two more questions. So I would love to chat about how you feel about your lifestyle now versus how you felt about it when you were starting to realize, oh my God, I've grown this company to 50 employees back in Germany, way past my goal, but I'm feeling a bit shit about it. Like, how does the feeling compare?
Yeah, I think when I had my company, it was only adding up to the stress, or it was like a emotional roller coaster. Yeah. So days were great, and then days were shit, and then days were great, and then days were shit. So It was never a constant okay feeling, but it was worries. It was just extremes. It was peaks in both directions. And yeah, that's not cool.
No.
So in these days, I don't know, these days I'm pretty chill. So I never thought about how I feel about how I live right now, but I'm just so content with where
I
am.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I guess so. No, and I don't know, I love my life right now much more than I did when I was having the agency.
Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing that you've done is you've identified exactly what it is that you enjoy and what makes you happy, which I think is such a valuable thing to know. And not a lot of people, some people don't know.
Or especially what I don't want. Yeah. It's more that. So it's, I don't really know. I mean, things that make me happy change all the time. But for me, not owning too many things, because they actually handcuff me to places.
Yes, so, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I know how you feel. Okay, so last question before the quick fire round. So in terms of my listeners, what general advice do you have for somebody who is stuck in a corporate 9-to-5 in the city and they want to go and work remotely and do something similar to what you did in terms of starting off as a freelancer or starting their own business, or maybe they even want to go and get a remote job, but they're too scared to do it and they haven't taken the leap and they've been putting it off, what would be your advice?
I would say maybe reduce your hours to 3/4 or something, and then just do what you want to do as a side business until you're brave enough to live off from it or off it. And then, so just start it in a safe place where you are right now, and or work on weekends or work in the evening or anything, and then just build it to a point where it's actually safe to leave your job. I think that's a pretty nice way.
And do you say that from a financial point of view, or is it more like testing out whether you actually enjoy it or a bit of both?
It's more from a financial point of view. I would say you will never stop testing out what you enjoy. So there's no point in figuring it out in 2 weeks and then sticking to that forever. So no, I think it's more like what makes you able to actually live this life, and then you can do whatever you want and try different things out.
Yeah. Okay. Amazing advice. Now I have a quick fire round.
Oh, okay.
You're reading my questions.
No. I seriously didn't.
Okay. Where is your favorite place that you've ever traveled to?
Here.
I knew you were going to say that.
That's easy.
So here is Canggu in Bali, just for people listening. And do you want to say why? I guess we've kind of covered it already.
This is actually Pereiranan and not Canggu.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
but Bali in general, any place here, really. Why? Yeah, because, I don't know.
We
said that. It's very diverse as well, so you kind of have many different things, even on the small island.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I've just come back from a couple of, a week and a half traveling around Bali, so that definitely a lot of diversity. Okay, number two. So this podcast is called the Well and Wild podcast, and I called it that because I believe that to be well in life, you have to do some wild things. And what I mean is go against the norm, go against conventional societal beliefs. So, Niels, what's the wildest thing that you've ever done?
I have two things that come to my mind, which is not making it a quick fire round. So one thing, it has nothing to do with business, but I'm scared of heights.
Okay.
And when I was drunk at Oktoberfest, when I was at Oktoberfest, there's the Skyfall Tower where you go up and then you fall. Yeah. And I was always like, I'm never going on there. And then after a few beers, I was being like, let's go up there. And then I was sitting there and I was dying. However, not really important. I would say the other thing is, it's not wild at all. Still, it's a maybe unconventional thing that I said I will never, ever change who I am for a stage. So because when I was starting out speaking, I was always wearing a shirt, right, like a buttoned shirt, mm-hmm, and being super serious and everything. Then there was this one conference. It's really not quickfire, sorry. One conference where it was always more with friends. Everyone was kind of hungover every day because it was a lot of partying. And then there I would always speak in my t-shirt, like just how I am, and make fun and blah, blah, blah. And it was really cool. And I always got the best feedback there. And then especially at some point, a guy wearing a suit comes to me and he was completely the opposite of what I was at this conference. And he said that my talk was the best talk he's ever heard. And it was so inspirational because I'm not changing myself. Mm-hmm. And that kind of made click in my head. And that was the last day, or that was the day where I said I will never, dress up for someone on a stage. So, yeah, and starting that, or being myself and doing all these childish jokes and having, memes in my talks and everything, I think is now kind of what defines me and what people like. So, yeah, that was a big moment for me and pretty unconventional, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think, and that's really important, and I definitely relate to that. I used to work in banking, and I was told once that I looked too casual for the floor, not even for client meetings, you know. And like, sometimes people ask me why I left banking, and I said, you know, in tech I get to wear jeans, and people thought that was a ridiculous reason. Obviously there were some other reasons, but what I wear doesn't make any difference to my sales output or my results, really, at the end of the day. And if it does, if the client is judging me based on wearing jeans, then I don't really want to do business with that person.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think what you're saying is really important, and also it's hard to perform at your best when you're not being authentic either, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I totally agree. Anyway, that wasn't quickfire at all.
Sorry.
Final question. So your best piece of advice that you've ever received or you've ever been given, or I guess kind of like a life mantra. But you kind of just did say that.
I think my most important piece of advice that was given to me by someone that I give to others these days is you really need to specialize. Mm-hmm. And so many people don't, just because they are like, oh, if I can earn money here and if I can get this job, that job, I will just do it instead of taking the time to specialize.
Mm-hmm. And what is the benefits of specializing, in your opinion?
You get great at what you're doing, and much greater than you would be if you didn't. And you can build your personal brand for a specialization. So, I don't know. For me, it just had all the great benefits, and it allows me to do what I do these days.
Yeah, amazing. Thanks, Neil. So, where can the listeners find you? And you have some amazing memes on your Instagram account, which I know people will want to come and follow.
So, on Instagram, I'm pretty active these days. So, it's at Niels Kato, which is...
I'll link it in the show notes, the spelling, for the English listeners.
Yeah, and... apart from that, I don't know, just on my website, you can go to nielskato.com, or I have a podcast which is about online marketing, but also very entertaining, I guess. It's with my best friend, and it's called The Izzy and Niels Show.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And for the listeners, because I've got a lot of British listeners, Izzy is British, and she's from, where's she from?
From the trash place called Burnley.
No, you cannot call it a trash place.
She says it herself.
Yes. Okay. She's from up north, so you should definitely check out their podcast. And what's the kind of things that you chat about on the podcast?
It's all around online marketing, but also around speaking at conferences, building personal brands, but always connected to online marketing. Mm-hmm. And
Izzy specializes in SEO, doesn't she? So it's kind of covering that aspect
as
well.
Yeah. I always introduce her as the best SEO that I know, and I know many. And I actually believe that. And so I do conversion optimization. She does search engine optimization, and the both fields work pretty well together. So
So I will post all of those links in the show notes for you to go and check out. But thank you so much for joining me, Niels.
Thanks for having me.
Amazing conversation.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope that you enjoyed it. If you enjoyed it, I'd be really grateful if you could send it on to one friend or share on social media, as I'm really trying to grow the reach of this podcast and get more people listening. And also, it's really, really helpful to get more and more amazing guests on for you as well. So thank you to Niels for coming on, and thank you so much for listening, and have an amazing week.